Hello, everyone. Before I start the episode, I wanted to say thank you to everyone who has listened, downloaded, and shared this podcast. We are always trying to improve, and all the feedback you have given us has been great. I would also like to encourage you to subscribe to our daily newsletter to stay up to date on the newest podcast episodes, industry insights, and Mercator Advisor Group commentary. Again, thank you to everyone who comes and listens to our episodes, and now, on with the show.
Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack, and on today's episode, we're going to be talking about open banking. And to help me with that conversation, I have Mark Atherton, the Group Vice President of Financial Services Global Business Unit at Oracle, and Aaron McPherson, the VP of Research Operations at Mercator Advisor Group. Mark, Aaron, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Ryan. Good to be here.
Yes, thank you, Ryan.
Now, so while some of our listeners may be familiar with the concept of open banking, for those who are not, can you give us a brief overview of what open banking means? And also, what are some of the applications and services, you know, is open banking addressing?
Sure. So open banking is really rooted in the whole idea of data sharing between, you know, a bank and basically an unaffiliated third party. The concept isn't entirely new, but some of what we're doing in open banking is new. So the key enabler is all around APIs, which is an application programming interface. And again, APIs aren't necessarily new, right? I mean, they've been used in decades for banks, but typically to move banking information, like a balance between a bank and accounting software. You know, what's new now is that we're using APIs to actually do banking activity like payments. You know, APIs have been around for a long time. It's pretty well established. You know, you can think of, you know, probably some of the earliest adopters were eBay or Google Maps when Google was creating mashup applications, you know, leveraging Google Maps. But these were closed APIs, and, you know, and they were really, the terms were defined by Apple, eBay, or Google. Open APIs, sort of open banking, you know, the terms around the APIs are really established more by the regulator and have a common set of terms that banks are being forced to conform with, as opposed to banks pushing their own, you know, their own terms for the APIs out there. So the European regulators, you know, spurred a lot of this effort. They started with the Payment Services Directive in the early 2000s and then came out with the revised directive, which is known as PSD2, in 2015. And again, the idea was really to spur innovation, and, you know, PSD2 was that, really was that key launch point, I think, where we saw this really take off and, you know, drove the banks to have to really open up, you know, their banking capability and allow innovators outside of banks to create services that consumers could use and then actually, you know, reach their funds and use that through third-party services.
Yes, and I think in some of the research we've done at Mercator, one of the opportunities we've seen is that banks, they will spend a lot of money on things like identity verification services and fraud scoring, can use open APIs as a way to monetize those services outside of their regular ecosystem. So if you look at what Visa has done with their authentication API portal, they're actually combining solutions from a number of different vendors and making that available. So I think that's a model that we'll see some banks adopt if they've got some specialized capabilities that they've got in-house.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Now, what is behind this industry, you know, push towards open banking, and how do you anticipate this shift towards open banking will impact the relationship between traditional banks and fintechs?
Yeah, I mean, the initial push, again, it came from European regulators. You know, the UK in particular probably had the strongest push, and it was rooted in this sense that, you know, banks are sort of holding their customers hostage, and that, you know, banks were slow to innovate, but consumers really couldn't do much about it. So there were some interesting services that were available to consumers, but if you couldn't connect them to the bank, it didn't really matter, right? And so the banks saw them as competitive, and so they held them out, and you know, and that's really where that friction was in the market. So you know, today now you have a case where you've got, you know, applications like Mint here in the US that have a really strong money management service, including electronic bill pay. That service just isn't very interesting if you can't actually do the electronic bill pay. So, you know, now we can actually connect those applications to the, to the banking services and, and create some pretty, interesting capabilities. Early adopters, some early players tried to get you to transfer your money from the bank to the new service, but that really never took off. So now through APIs, we can actually connect and embed these services directly into a banking application and pull banking services sort of directly into a third-party service. So Zelle is an example where you see this going both ways. So Zelle is, many banks embed Zelle into their online banking applications, but you can also use Zelle as a standalone and connect, bank data, so that you can do real-time payments out of Zelle.
Yes, I think one of the things that people have started to understand is banks have understood that fintechs often have an advantage in terms of customer intimacy and their ability to respond quickly to changing market needs, whereas fintechs have realized that banks have the scale that they need and that it would be very expensive for them to build on their own. So there's kind of a complementary set of needs here, which is why there's more interest in working together, and that's why there's more interest in creating open APIs that make it easier to work with fintech so it doesn't have to take years to get up and running with them.
Great. Now, Mark, as you pointed out, regulations and rules mandating open banking were enacted in the UK earlier this year. So how are US banks addressing open banking, and do you expect similar regulations to be passed here in the US?
So right, it was rooted in EMEA and the UK in particular, from the regulators, and that started really a movement that has pretty much taken hold globally, certainly in the U.S. U.S. banks are responding. You can see this today with lots of services that are available through and connect to your banks, right? So I gave an example of Mint. There's examples of Zelle. Venmo is used, widely by, young people to do payments and the like. So it's out there. It's real. It's taken hold. You probably won't see I wouldn't necessarily see regulations to push the movement here in the U.S., especially because we are going into sort of a there's a sort of a negative reaction to increased regulation right now in the U.S. But you could see regulations start to come up as you get into data privacy, fraud, and some of those issues. But the initial impetus to actually drive it and push the banks to open up, a lot of the bigger banks are able to respond to that and have done so. Some of the smaller banks, just from cost, investment, others, you think of community banks, credit unions, right? I mean, they're probably more challenged. I don't know that regulation is actually going to push them to do it. It's probably a different issue.
All right. And so as banks open up to third parties, they face a challenge of managing the exposure of customer data. So how can banks address the potential cybersecurity challenges of open banking?
Well, banks invested a huge amount in data privacy and fraud in particular today, and it's pretty well managed, and as they open the APIs, there's significant testing that's done if you're going to connect to those APIs. You've got to prove data security capabilities of your applications to the bank so that those connections are made. It is an interesting question, and I think this is going to evolve, is where does that line around fraud, where's that line drawn? Today, if somebody gets into your banking application for, whatever the bank is, and commits fraud, usually the bank is going to back you up and cover the fraud liability. If somebody gets into your banking account through a third party application, the bank is probably going to push back and say, hey, you as a third party developer, you created an application. The consumer was tricked into opening the application that way. Fraudulent payments were made. That's on you, not on us as the bank, right? So I think that, that's probably, that's an issue out there certainly that everybody's thinking about.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges is that consumers may hold their banks responsible, even if legally they aren't, because they're accustomed to them performing that role. We've seen some of that with Zelle, where people have used the service in ways that it wasn't intended, got burned, and then found that their bank was not willing to cover them. So, you know, one of the things that you're giving up, perhaps unwittingly, when you use a real-time payment service versus a card, is you're losing that zero liability guarantee. And so I think communication is important, and consumers need to understand, who's responsible if something goes wrong. And that's a challenge for banks to communicate that, especially when working with third parties. And it may be something that banks want to consider actually charging for. So one of the things you can do when you're making an agreement with a fintech is to charge them for insurance, essentially, that if something goes wrong, you will cover it, but they have to pay a fee for that. And that's another way to leverage the fraud management capabilities that banks have invested in.
Right. So now, as we look forward here, what are the other challenges, you know, that will be, you know, be present with open banking to banks?
Well, it's interesting to categorize, you know, when you start to segment the banks, that's when this question starts to become interesting, right? So, you know, if we think of the four largest U.S. banks and then sort of the super regionals, they have very sophisticated IT teams, very sophisticated security teams, lots of capability in technology. Most of them are on the forefront of all of this now. They have API strategies and the rest. Now, when you get into, you know, community banks and credit unions, that's where this probably becomes a bigger challenge. In many cases, they've actually outsourced, you know, a lot of their technology to third-party providers. And, you know, their internal technology capability is incredibly limited. So, you know, they already see some challenges in that just in digital banking, right? And, you know, the kinds of digital services they would offer as a bank, because really they have very limited capability to build those on their own. And so now if they have to invest in, you know, infrastructure and capabilities around open banking, it becomes that much more of a challenge, because many of the platforms that are run today by, the big third party providers in the U.S., you know, they aren't API enabled. And, you know, they'll go back to the banks and say, look, if you want, you know, APIs and this stuff, then you have to pay to build it out, as you would expect, but it's very expensive. So, you know, we already know that the community banks and credit unions are under a tremendous amount of pressure. We lose, you know, 200 to 300 a year, every year in the U.S. This is probably just another, big heavy log on the load that they're trying to pull and survive. So I think that's, you know, the smaller banks are probably the ones that have the biggest challenges with this.
Well, I know that some of the processors that we talk to who work with credit unions actually see this as a business opportunity, that they can work directly with some of these fintechs and provide an integrated turnkey service to their credit unions and to community banks. So I think there's a big role for processors and technology companies to digest this and make it available and provide a lot of the support for it so that smaller institutions can take advantage of it.
Great. So now I think that kind of leads us into the million-dollar question here. So how can banks embrace open banking and make it work for them and for their clients?
So you got to get into it and you got to get started. A lot of banks are going to be, you know, probably slow to the move, because, you know, nobody wakes up in the morning and is like, hey, you know, I really want to change my bank today, right? So I want to reset all my cards, my accounts, my balances, my bill pay, all that stuff. So, you know, it's easy, you know, complacency is, it's easy to get complacent around this. For the large regionals, obviously, you know, accelerate the path towards APIs and getting, you know, your, the applications API enabled, you know, there's services firms that can help build those APIs. There's, Oracle has an entire set of, over 1,500 banking APIs, and we have supporting services and managing APIs, running APIs in order to support things like that. See a lot of traction around that in the U.S. Get the second one is then, really get back to innovation because, the APIs open those channels, but at the same time, there's nothing that prevents you as a bank from doing a lot of the same things that the fintechs are doing. I think there's an interesting question, Aaron brought this up earlier, the sort of battle between a third-party provider and a bank of, who's going to be responsible for fraud. That if you're using the banking application, the banking capability, the bank's going to stand behind you. You can use a third-party service, but if that's unwittingly you open that up and you're a victim of fraud, the bank probably isn't going to stand behind you on that. We know in the U.S. that there's 10 to 15 million victims of bank fraud every year. The fees, the costs associated with that somewhere between estimates range $8 to $15 billion a year. Banks would love to see some of that move on to somebody else, but that's what's out there. So I think banks continue to be in a really good position to innovate and provide these services, back their customers, with the standing of the bank, are positioned to weather through all this.
Excellent. So before we close out this conversation, is there anything in addition that you'd like to add?
No, I think that, it's an interesting and very exciting time in banking. And, there's a lot of the move towards fintech and investments in fintech is significant. A lot of it's going into lending. A lot of it's going into payments. Banks have certainly taken notice. I think this has spurred banks to do more to innovate, probably than we've seen in the last, 15 plus years. It's an interesting time in this market, right? And, you can see the banks putting out a lot of really interesting services. You see them investing in fintechs like, the Wells Fargo investment in Zelle. And then you see some really cool, third-party applications come up that benefit consumers. So, banking has been pretty slow to innovate. You think of the things that you could do online, with an airline ticket or, even with, your cable provider, and you can do things from set-top box, from a phone, from anything, yet it's really hard to just get to manage and move money. This market is finally going through its transformation, and obviously we've got a framework now to do it through the open banking efforts.
Yeah, and I think in Europe, one angle that we're seeing that is a little different from the bank and fintech angle is that banks are actually using the APIs themselves to communicate with each other. And so one of the challenges that banks have traditionally had, which is getting a good picture of their customers' total financial activity, is now becoming easier because they can access that information, such as balances, through these open APIs. So I think it's enabling banks to provide better service, and there might not even be a fintech involved at all. Or again, banks might, if they have a particularly strong capability, try to sell that through open APIs. So I think we're going to see a lot of interesting models coming out in the next couple of years as standards get resolved and as pilots get completed. So it'll definitely be interesting to check back and see how things have developed.
All right. Well, thank you, Mark and Aaron, for joining us today for speaking about open banking. And we hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Great. Thanks, Ryan. Thanks, Aaron.
Yeah, thank you. It's been great.